Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
What's that, Michael?
This was a song that was in my head.
Wait. Michael wants everyone to know that he takes the fifth. Okay, Michael, go ahead.
No, I have the right. I have the right not to self-incriminate, and I'm going to fight for my right. How you doing, my friend?
Doing great. How about you?
I'm doing great, man. You know, the weather is beautiful. I don't know. I guess the weather is kind of like that Caribbean breezy weather. This is like the time of year where it feels like, I don't know, New Orleans is like San Diego with culture. So maybe that's what's in my mind right now with that song.
It has been perfect, and they're going to be in Lafayette Square, I think, tonight, right?
That's starting out. This is great time of year.
Unfortunately, I have a damn meeting to go to, but other than that, I'd be out there because it is just so pretty. I mean, it is gorgeous.
You know, Newell, there is a thing that I've still – I mean, there are a lot of mysteries of life, but one that I've definitely not solved is who are these people? Like, who are these people who are at Wednesday at the Square at, like, 5 o'clock, you know, when it's still beautiful, sunny out? Or who are the ones, like, when I was dropping my kids off at school who are there in their athleisure wear with their lattes and their snickerdoodles or whatever those dogs are? Like, are they all trustafarians? Like, who does this? Or were they just there to troll me and to mock me in my suit?
Just to remind you that you're not having as much fun as you thought you were having at your job, right?
they're just like piercing my self-delusion, and I'd appreciate it if they let me to continue to wrap myself in it. It's working.
Damn. It's how I get through each and every day.
Right. I mean, you know, you really don't want to see the world for how it is because, you know, like none of us get out of this thing alive. It doesn't end well.
Well, breaking news, Michael, the judge rules the city must pay school board $10 million, but dismisses the $90 million settlement agreement. So I guess that helps them get through a little bit of their budget shortfall here in the immediate future.
Yeah, I still, you know, to be honest, because of everything else going on with the Super Bowl and then our annual meeting this Friday and being in Houston for the energy conference, I haven't really focused on that situation. But it seems very strange to me at a fiscal level and at a political level. You know, we've got a city with close to $1 billion total budget. You figure you can find that money to make sure that we're doing the right thing for our kids. So this sounds like this is a little bit of clawing back.
Yeah, for sure. Michael, let's get into the topics. Crime takes a holiday. The stats continue to look good, and I love when these trends continue in a positive fashion.
Yeah, the thing about crime that I've observed, and I think the literature supports it over time, is that it acts like a virus. And so violence begets violence, and peace tends to beget peace. And we're blessedly in one of those peaceful trends right now. So we just got the numbers back for Mardi Gras. And, of course, we were on high alert during Mardi Gras because of what happened January 1st. But there was the number is a 48%, nearly a 50% reduction in crime incidents versus last year, which is, you know, obviously really significant. And if you look at what's happening in kind of the worst measure of crime, or the best, but the worst act of crime, homicide, our January, if you take out the tragic killings from the terrorist attack on the 1st, there were 10 murders that month, which compares to 32 last year. And so that's, you know, obviously almost a two-thirds decline. So or over a two-thirds decline. So, yeah, we're continuing to do well. I was actually looking at the stats of 2024 versus 2022. And when you look at that, remember, 2022 was a mess. New Orleans was murder capital of the country. We've seen, I think, a 48%, again, close to 50% decline in homicide, total 2024 versus total 2022. And I know that some people, including my good friend Jeff Asher, have said, oh, you know, it's just national trends, or we really don't know. But if you look at the national trend, murder has blessedly been going down across the country, but 20%. So we are doing 2.5 times better, nearly, than the national average. And then people say, well, what do you attribute it to? I mean, see if you agree with this, Noel. You're the expert, but just observing it as a layperson, it's a return to proactive policing, constitutional proactive policing. It's better use of technology, and it's cooperation between the city and the state and JP and Orleans and the feds. Everybody just rowing in the same direction.
No, absolutely. It's that all of the above mentality that you and I have talked about, you know, regional cooperation, technology, deployment, strategy, staying to the strategy, being held accountable, making decisions. I mean, I hear from so many people that they say that Chief Kirkpatrick's biggest strength is she's not afraid to make a decision. And you've worked in organizations, Michael, where you have folks above you that they're afraid of their shadow and they can't seem to make a decision. Well, you know what happens. The company dies on the vine.
You know, correct. The
right,
company
wrong,
withers.
Right, different. Yeah.
No. Look, I mean, Jack Welch was actually not he was a false hero as a CEO at GE because he basically destroyed the company. But he did have one good line, or his ghostwriter had one good line, which was he said, and I truly believe this, strategy is about picking a direction and then executing like heck. Right. That's not exactly how he said it, but that's what it is. Because you think about it this way. I'm kind of a part-timer, used to be a part-time sailor before I almost sunk my dad's little tub. And, you know, when you sail and you want to get across the harbor, there are a number of ways you can tack to get there. The key thing is just to take off, and then when you need to, you pivot and you come around, and you get there, you know, if you've got enough skill and the winds are blessed. And so, organizationally, it's really, really important to take a decision because otherwise, again, you just wither. But also, one of the things that I realized in the Super Bowl effort is that people want managers to make decisions not because they like being bossed around, but because it de-risks their work. If the manager doesn't make a decision, then me as a staffer, if I do make a decision or take an action, I'm assuming that liability. And people learn real quick, once they get their hands slapped for trying to do their job, that the safest thing to do is to just lie low. And so you're actually doing everybody a favor by presenting a direction and saying, let's do this together. And look, if it doesn't work, we're going to change, but the buck stops with me. And I think Chief Kirkpatrick, she's every single officer I talk to says she's a breath of fresh air, and I think her decision-making is part of that.
And I think we underestimate the headwinds that they continue to have. I mean, the issues relative, to the federal court monitoring, the consent decree. I mean, it's been on again, off again, issue, not issue. The promotions list, I mean, you know, made light of taking the fifth. I don't know that I've ever seen that in an administrative hearing of a mayor who sets policy and simply asking questions, or maybe she'd more to interfere in the process.
Oh, I didn't even realize you were referring to that. No, that's pretty extraordinary. Wow.
And you think about all of these things, these are all headwinds for an organization. You know, and I remind people all the time that organizations really they really take off and you know, when, you know, using your sailboat analogy, when you trim the sails and you're right on it and you're in that groove and you can just let go of the tiller handle because you're in it, right? And you've reached the maximum efficiency capacity of that vessel at that point in time, and it may be for a short duration. You don't ever get there if you don't have confidence in your leaders, if you're not proud of what they do, proud of their representation of the organization. And, you know, NOPD, for years, it had to make excuses about their leadership. They get in a good leader, and now they're making excuses, having to make excuses about the mayor. And it seems like we never get the two leaders in line with one another on these issues, where we can just go about doing our work and being proud and not having to defend oneself. Your thoughts?
Yeah, we do make it awfully difficult on ourselves oftentimes by creating these issues or problems that we have to focus non-productive effort and non, you know, replaceable time on. But I do agree that what Chief Kirkpatrick has done is she's proven that she's a cop's cop. She has an open door policy that she's well known for now. And I think that part of it, too, is if you think back about the challenges that we've had with our NOPD, there always have been issues of nepotism and favoritism. And I think that, ironically, one of the criticisms or the concerns about Chief Kirkpatrick coming in was that she was so manifestly, obviously, not from here and didn't try to hide it. That's actually turned out to be an enormous strength, because nobody's going to see Chief Ann and say, oh, you know, she's favoring people from her ward. I mean, no, her ward is like Seattle or Oakland. And I think that's allowed her to not, you know, it's silly to even entertain those notions. And I think that's allowed people to relax.
No doubt. The president of Entergy was making comments about this data center and what's going on up there as being something that is of a magnitude that we have never experienced in this state. And it continues to get accolades, and it's just a big, big deal there in Richland Parish, right?
It's a big deal for Richland Parish, obviously. It'll end up creating between 500 and 1,000 jobs, which is generationally changing in Richland, potentially. This points to, I think, the larger opportunity in the state. If you look across the horizon or out on the horizon, there are two mega trends relative to energy in the world. The first is that demand is going through the roof, largely because of AI. And I think I've said it before, I'll say it again. A ChatGPT search takes about 17 times the energy of a Google search. So you can understand that there's going to be a magnitude or two increase in energy demands. At the same time, there's demand for lower carbon intensity, for lower emissions. And the thing that's incredible about Louisiana is that we have the ability with our natural gas, with our fracking and our natural gas capacity, and Entergy is mostly natural gas fired, to produce that energy for places like Meta. But we also have the technology and the geology to use carbon capture to keep over 90% of it out of the atmosphere. That's going to be the way that we're able to sustain energy needs, but be more gentle on the environment. And there's probably nobody who's better, you know, positioned for it than Louisiana. And so I think that the future energy revolution that we're in right now, that's starting right now, is the thing that can turn around 40 years, 50 years of stagnation for our state. I don't think that that is an overstatement in terms of the potential.
Absolutely. Covington goes galactic. Global Star celebrated the opening of its new 10,000 square foot facility. I was watching a story on that. They do some pretty incredible things.
Yeah, they somehow seem to always be under the radar, and I don't know why. For anybody that has an Apple Watch, Global Star out of Covington is the technology in your Apple Watch so that if you get lost and there's no cell signal, you can get a satellite signal to save your life. It's the SOS capability in every single Apple Watch. So obviously the potential and the ongoing partnership with Apple is just absolutely massive. This week they opened up a new 10,000-square-foot control center, which I think is now bigger than the control center that NASA uses at Houston. I'm just thrilled for this. This is a company that we brought over from California. Man, Newell, it might have been 2014. And Jay Monroe, their chairman, is a Tulane grad. He lives here part-time. And they've been buffeted by the winds of telecommunications and attacked by other companies. But they're still in it, and they're doubling down. And the fact that the FCC chairman was at this event to cut the ribbon along with House Majority Leader Scalise shows that they are positioned correctly in D.C. as well. So, a great technology story for the region and the country right up in Covington.
Michael, great news for those folks in Belchase. All the problems with that bridge, hopefully resolved.
The Belchase Bridge is fully opened. That's what you say, right? If you're, if you're old school, right? And it's painted a beautiful orange and yellow. It was a long time coming. It's going to be a toll bridge paid largely by trucking traffic that goes over it. This is significant because PPPs, where infrastructure is paid for by a private entity and then recouped through tolling, is largely going to be the future in America just because that's where the money is going to come from. So we hope that this bridge works successfully and that the residents of Plaquemines like it and find the way the toll is run to be reasonable, because it is a model that personally I would like to see rolled out around Louisiana as a way of rebuilding our infrastructure affordably. The other thing that we have to do there, and let me say it to all your listening audience, because we're going to be pushing it hard, is we need the Peters Road bypass. This is a road that would go from 23 and then cut up into Gretna below the Belchase Air Base. And it's critical because it will give people from Plaquemines, from Lower Plaquemines, a totally new way to get out of the parish. And with Venture Global investing another $18 billion in their facility, bringing the total to about 40, it's absolutely critical that the bridge is great, but it's absolutely critical that we have yet other ways to get in and out of the parish.
No, and that's always been a challenge, for sure. All right, we got to get to a break. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of G&O Inc. We will be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW, because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. Like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour, the boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What is Dax, are you
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc. And I think we have a special guest, Michael.
Yeah, we do. This is an old friend of mine, not old, but a friend of mine for many, many years. Daniel Espremer, who leads the Pelican Foundation, and he's here to talk about something incredibly important to us, Constitutional Amendment 2.
Hey, Daniel, good morning. Welcome. How are you?
Daniel, welcome to the show. He is the Chief Executive Officer of the Pelican Institute for Public Policy. Let's talk about Amendment 2. I think this is the hardest one for people to kind of wrap their heads around as they're going into voting booths, not only this week during early voting, but on March the 29th for the election. I'll let you start out wherever you think you need to start, because it covers a lot of territory.
It does, Noel. You're absolutely right. You know, this is reform to a very long and complex part of our Constitution in an attempt to simplify. So, you know, the highlights here are: lowers the maximum rate of income tax allowed in the Constitution. It protects the homestead exemption and exemptions for religious institutions and nonprofits. It doubled the standard deduction for our seniors. It also enacts a government growth limit to constrain the growth of recurring government spending so that budget dollars can be focused on core priorities, one-time infrastructure investments, and ultimately continuing to lower tax rates for Louisianans. So there's a lot in it, but those are really the core highlights.
Well, let's just try to clean some of this up. So when we say it protects the homestead exemption, that's kind of a little misleading, right? It just doesn't touch the homestead exemption, because a homestead exemption is already protected in the Louisiana state constitution.
You're right. So, you know, but there's been a lot of discussion, a lot of confusion about the idea that this may somehow change the homestead exemption. So the homestead exemption is preserved in the Constitution. Some of the details for it, it's an incredibly long section of the Constitution, are moved where they belong, back in statute, but with a protection of 2/3 vote required to make any changes.
Let's talk about the tax rate. So, at the present time, the highest tax rate available is 4.25. Is that right?
That is the current max allowed in the Constitution. That's correct.
It will get dropped to 3.75.
Correct.
And the current tax rate that we are taxed under at the present time is 3%.
That is correct. We have a flat income tax as of January 1st of 3%.
So what does this actually provide? This says that the max increase that the legislature could take on with a 2/3 vote would be another 3/4 of 1%.
That's right. And that would also require a vote of the people to increase that. So it could with a two-thirds vote get to that amount. You're right.
Yes, above to that, the 3.75.
Would require a vote of the people.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. Correct.
So right now we're at 3%. So right now we are taxed at a 3% flat tax.
Correct.
Okay.
And this was, you know, there was a maximum already in the Constitution. So this just is part of a broader reform as the state moves toward trying to get something close to a 0% income tax to compete with our neighbors. This just ensures that there isn't some wild swing as tax rates have already come down that might impact the economy or our taxpayers. So this is just an extra protection in the Constitution.
So one of the things that's caught the eyes, especially seniors, is the doubling of the standard individual income tax deduction for anyone 65 and older, and lower the cap on the overall individual income tax rate that we just talked about. So how does this doubling the standard tax deduction work? I think it's 12.5% for an individual filer. Is that right?
That's right. The first $12,500 of everyone's taxes are tax-free. And should Constitutional Amendment 2 pass, that will double for Louisianans 65 and older to the first $25,000 of their income being tax-free.
And if you're married, filing jointly, that would go to a full $50,000, right?
Correct. So that would move from $25,000 for all filers up to $50,000 for anyone over 65.
For a joint retired couple, effectively.
Correct.
Right. And there's no income level restriction.
Correct. That is right.
Okay. That I get that question is asked of me a lot. So let's talk about this budget stabilization fund, which was the rainy day fund, mm-hmm. which many years ago was looked upon very, very favorably when this state decided to do that, as well as the revenue stabilization trust fund, which is, I believe, a newer mechanism that has been utilized. What happens to these two funds?
So that's right. There is the budget stabilization, which is we typically call the rainy day fund. And then a new fund about 7 or 8 years ago was started that we called the revenue stabilization fund. And that took any corporate tax revenues over $600 million and put it into a savings account. So that savings account has built up over even just the last couple of years as tax reform has made sort of leveled the playing field and made corporate revenue less swingy. It made it less sort of high and low. So that savings account has built up to over $3 billion at this point. So what Constitutional Amendment 2 proposes is merging those two accounts, increasing the current cap of the rainy day fund and filling it to the cap with resources from the current revenue stabilization fund. So we're going to have a healthier, larger rainy day fund and free up dollars into the general fund and to help support the transition from some of these tax changes, just to make sure that goes smoothly and that we can keep down the road of tax reform.
Well, that's where I get confused, right?
Okay.
Because I think the cap on the revenue stabilization fund is what, $5 billion?
That's correct.
And what is the cap on the budget stabilization fund?
So that's going to increase to, I believe, 7% of overall tax collection. So I think it's going to be filled to about $2.5 to $3 billion total.
So when we combine them, the new cap then is what?
I believe it's right somewhere between $2.5 and $3 billion.
So then actually we're dropping the cap and we're making dollars available to the general fund to be spent on the whim of the state legislature.
Well, so there's a couple of things to keep in mind. The first is when that fund was created.
Before we keep anything in mind, because when the Revenue Stabilization Fund was created, we were supposed to be spending the interest on those dollars on, you know, one-time capital projects, right? And the hope was to get to that $5 billion sooner rather than later. A lot of states actually call these sovereign wealth funds. You see them. They're very popular. The bond markets react very favorably to this. Financial markets also respond very favorably to this. It was looked upon very favorably by the bond commission. So, I mean, I remember all of this going on at the time. I was right around the time that I left as being sheriff. And I don't. So what's changed? Why is this not a good vehicle or mechanism any longer that we would have a desire to change this and kind of take these restricted dollars that provided a lot of healthy things and put it in the general fund?
Absolutely. There's a couple of things to keep in mind. You know, when I was telling somebody earlier, when I was a teenager, lived a very exciting teenage life, my mother gave me a copy of Dave Ramsey's book about financial peace. And so this is using those kinds of principles. Look, the state is currently incurring debt to do one-time investments in infrastructure, in pensions. And one of the sort of guiding principles as the legislature developed Amendment 2 was to be much smarter about our finances, to pay off debt where we could. So $2 billion of, this is a different fund maybe we can talk about, but $2 billion of funds locked up in the Constitution related to education are going to be used to pay down teacher debt in order to make permanent a teacher pay raise. Similar principle here. We're going to use these dollars to continue what they were supposed to, which is one-time investments, whether that's in infrastructure or paying down the inventory tax as parishes work to remove that inventory tax to bridge the gap there. And these are funds that are going to be used to ensure we have a much more stable and pro-growth tax climate and, again, continue to pay down debt and provide that flexibility to the legislature to focus on high priorities of voters. And remember, that government growth limit, what it's going to ensure is those dollars still go to those one-time investments, and we're constraining the growth of ongoing government spending. So everyone wins in this scenario, and we get to build up our savings even further.
But that growth limit thing, you know as well as I, those numbers are not going to be that big, right?
Well, so the way the growth limit is set up is that recurring spending can only grow as fast as inflation and population. So if this had been in place over the last decade, we actually already could have used those savings to eliminate the personal income tax. So this will keep in check increases in recurring programs and make sure that the legislature focuses on real priorities and in the meantime free up one-time dollars, non-recurring dollars, to make those investments either in continuing to drive down the rate of the income tax or to continue to invest in the backlog of infrastructure projects, likely some combination of those two.
Wait, you're saying that the government growth limit calculation would had it been in place for the 10 years, it would have generated enough money to eliminate state income taxes in perpetuity?
Correct. So the key here, well, sorry, go ahead.
Well, I thought I read somewhere that something that y'all talked about, what was it, $350 billion or something?
I'm not quite sure what that's in reference to, but what I can tell you is, if you look at what the personal income tax was collecting a decade ago, and looked at the difference between where the state budget is now and what it would have been under this structure of the government growth limit, the difference of that is about $3.5 billion, which was at that time what income tax collections were. So that, of course, as the economy or as we've seen the state grow and the state budget grow, even just in the last year, that in personal income tax amount has increased what we've collected. And of course, we've raised sales taxes a couple of times along the way, too. But by constraining that spending without adding another tax somewhere else, we could be on the way to eliminating or have eliminated the income tax altogether.
And how much does income tax generate for the state of Louisiana annually?
Right now, it's about $4.5 billion.
Okay. Because that $3.5 billion total for 10 years means you are only generating $350 million a year.
Right? No. That's the difference annually. So the
that was an annual.
Budget.
Okay.
Correct.
All right. That's where you lost me. Okay. All right.
Gotcha.
All right, we got to get to a break. We're visiting with Daniel the Spammer. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Michael Heck, President and CEO of GNO Inc., and special guest Daniel the Spammer, Chief Executive Officer of the Pelican Institute for Public Policy. We have been digging deep into Amendment 2 because this covers a lot of stuff, almost the entire Article 7 of the state constitution on a number of different issues. Daniel, let's jump to this school portion of this relative to teacher pay raises.
Yes. So a really important part of this is, again, the same kind of principle. Take $2 billion that's been locked up in dedicated funds over the last couple of decades. Use that to pay off local school board teacher pension debt, which, as you know, makes up a significant portion of the total compensation that school boards have to pay. And in return for that, the law requires them to use that savings to make permanent the teacher pay raise that has come in stipends for the last couple of years. So, you know, this puts the decision about teacher compensation back where I believe it belongs. Teachers are employees of their local school boards, and local school boards are in the best position to respond to needs of those communities. The politics of this over the last, you know, decades have been teachers and those school boards come to the state to ask them to pay for this. So this is a double good. It pays off debt that we need to do anyway, and empowers and allows those school boards to make permanent that teacher pay raise.
So does this forecast that the state's intention is to get out of the pay raise business with teachers altogether in the future?
You know, I don't think that's likely, given the politics of that, and given a desire certainly for the state to play a role in ensuring our education system improves. But I do think it helps to refocus the debate and remind voters and legislators and everybody that, you know, ultimately school boards have the power to make those decisions now. The state almost certainly will play some kind of role in the future. I think that's probably inevitable. But this is a good debate and discussion to be having at the local level as well.
And because we are fine-tuning contribution rates of employers from roughly 21.5% to about 15.9% on that contribution rate, is there any kind of commitment from the pension fund that they're not going to tweak benefits for the members, which throws this calculation completely out?
My understanding is there is a commitment to not adjust those any further. You know, obviously the future, you know, those will be discussions that could come up in the future. But my understanding is there's a pretty firm commitment, at least from the legislature and the governor, to ensure that this is a stable source for teachers in the near future.
Now, I know a lot of and I certainly hope that the calculations that were made by the respective school boards were on proposed TOs, table of organizations, and not necessarily where they presently are right now because they're understaffed.
Right. Yes, and that is my understanding as well.
You know, because that would throw this whole thing upside down as well, because we already know, I think, a little less than a third of the school boards are not going to come out on a positive side or break even with this calculation. They're going to need some additional juice from the state, right?
Well, the way this program is structured is that every school board will at least break even some will even have extra money left over. And the law requires that any extra does not go to overhead, but goes directly into classroom programming or other teacher programs.
Now, what's interesting to me, and I don't know if y'all have looked at this, but the unfunded accrued liability continues to grow in this fund and other funds as well. I'm not being critical of this fund. And at the current contribution rates and their target number on investment income, interest income, pretty aggressive. How do we deal with that? I mean, so we'll be eating into this $2 billion bogey at a rate, I don't know how quick, I could probably do the calculation given some time, but it dissipates because we know right now, every day that goes by, we're further in the hole.
And
right
I
now where the
you.
Market is, right now where the market is, they ain't no telling how far we're getting in the hole.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, these pension systems have been a problem for a long time. There's a reason almost no private sector entity still provides what we would call a defined benefit contribution like our state employees currently have. And frankly, it's not very popular, especially with younger workers coming into the workforce, the way these programs are structured. So I think we're well overdue for a bigger debate on how do we keep our promise to our teachers and public servants while we reform these pension systems into the future so that they can better serve our workers and be more sustainable to the state. Because you're right, we can't keep going exactly down the path we've been going for the last several decades.
And that's why I was really kind of mystified as to why we chose this financing scheme. Because this is a very exotic scheme that has a lot of intangibles and a lot of unknowns. And,
well,
I don't have a lot of confidence in this one. I can tell you that.
Well, I certainly understand that over the long term. The short term is pretty predictable. I know we're out of time here, but this is something we can continue to talk about. In the short term, it's a very good thing for teachers, taxpayers, the state. Certainly, we encourage a yes vote on Amendment 2.
How short is short?
I would say, yeah, in the next 3 to 5 years, I think we have a pretty good handle on this. But we've got to really dig in and get this right over the long term.
That may be a little aggressive, but that's, you say tomato, I say tomato. Well, thank you, Daniel. As always, truly enjoy the conversation. I mean, these are difficult issues. I mean, really, these are not, meat and potato stuff that you talk about at the kitchen table. It is big time stuff.
Well,
thank you so much.
Michael, thank you as well. Thank you, Noel. Daniel, after we get done with getting rid of income taxes, we'll get rid of property taxes like Florida. There you go. I'm in. Let's do it.
Can't wait to see that scheme. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
I'm Jordan. Lauren Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.